Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and you are listening on the My View Matters radio network. Got a lot lined up for tonight's show, and so I'm going to give the number now. And if you'd like to call in about any of the topics we've got lined up or anything that comes up, call us at area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. Be sure to hit 1 if you want to talk so I know that you want to talk, and be patient if I'm on a rant or whatever. And sometimes Blog Talk's a little slow to pop up that you're there. So if you want to call in, just dial the number, hit 1, be patient, we'll get to you. But I will ask that you keep comments short tonight because we have a lot going on. All right, so getting right to it here, we obviously today is Mother's Day, and we have a story here about if being a mom was a job with a $60,000 salary, this is what the Help Wanted ad would look like. And they have a fake news article or newspaper Help Wanted ad here. Salary $60,000 with an asterisk. First, it says salary not actually paid on the asterisk. Breaks down to $6.84 per hour. Job description, senior child care management / facilitator coordinator. This family-owned company is offering a great head of household opportunity for a woman with a double asterisk, and it says, sure, men may apply also, why not? Who wants to drop out of the rat race and experience a real change of pace? Responsibilities include cooking, cleaning, laundry, carpooling, first aid, preventing kids from watching too much TV, dealing with teen acne, and moral support. Applicants adverse to working long hours need not apply. 24/7, 365 days per year commitment required. Will get credit for 168-hour work week, but schedule eases with seniority. The successful applicant will work intimately with a hands-on partner permanently forever, no matter what. Fast-track promotion available to grand status if you can successfully recruit your client into the family firm. Vacations are flexible but must work on-call hours as needed. Experience, we're looking for a self-starter who may previously have been a prison guard, therapist, military commander, social media company CEO, COO, or a Scandinavian head of state. Benefits, no insurance, no benefits or retirement packages available, must work all federal and religious holidays and weekends. Proficiency in second-grade algebra preferable. This will be the best move you ever made, or so you'll tell everyone. So I just thought that was kind of a funny story, and it being Mother's Day, you know, thanks to all the mothers out there. Thank you to my wonderful wife who, you know, has raised our children, and we've got 3 now. So, you know, I just can't say enough good things about her, but, you know, thought it was appropriate to bring it up since it is Mother's Day. So on to the news. Interesting story here, just kind of one of those good news type things. A story here about how Germany is seeing a reduction in beer consumption overall, but the beer consumption that is occurring is actually many U.S. imported beers, and a lot of that has to do with our microbrewing, but also some of the larger brewing companies. And it's actually a big business to import American beers into Germany, which is good for our brewers. I mean, that's, you know, from what is essentially the home of beer, that, you know, we're getting very good recognition from the consumers there in Germany that we do have good selection of beers available. Also on kind of the miscellaneous news front, this is now about a month old, but we never got to it. The Postal Service has been forced to continue with Saturday mail delivery. Essentially, Congress blocked a move that the Postal Service tried to make to cut Saturday delivery in an effort to get their to stop losing money. And unfortunately, they were blocked by Congress. They're not allowed to do that. So the mail will continue to be delivered on Saturday, and the post office will continue to lose money. There's a report out from May 1st. This is a little while ago. I apologize with me not being here last week. I was out of town for work, and I was on a plane at the time the show was on. So you heard the pre-recorded show last week, and I thank you all for your patience on that. But there was a report about the Boston bomber had apparently repeatedly requested a lawyer and was ignored for a time. And we've all heard the story that once he was Mirandized, he actually quit talking. And in fact, that is the reason why you were supposed to be Mirandized, is to inform you of your rights, that you do have the right to remain silent. And, you know, that's a very clear indication that this guy's rights were violated. And bomber or not, we went over this two or three shows ago. You know, he was an American citizen and therefore is entitled to due process. And if you don't believe that the system is strong enough to deal with even the worst offenses, then you have no faith in the system. You know, we should be honoring due process. It's very, very important to the entire system. But I'm not going to get on that rant today because we don't have time. So moving on, got some stuff on the war on drugs front. First, here locally in Kentucky, everybody knows or should know that we passed an industrial hemp bill. Essentially, the core difference between industrial hemp and marijuana is the content of THC. The more THC is in the plant, the more it can act as an intoxicant. The less THC that there is in the plant, the less useful it is for an intoxicant. And industrial hemp, by what is generally considered a, I guess, de facto definition, the THC levels are so low that it literally will not get you high because of some of the other chemicals and whatever in industrial hemp. You can smoke it till the cows come home, and all you're going to get is a headache. But it does have very many industrial uses, and everything from clothing to even food and feed for livestock. There's even been talk about using hemp to clean up polluted sites, that because of the way hemp root structure works, it can actually absorb contaminants from the soil, so it could be a way to clean a contaminated area in a very green way. So we passed a bill here in Kentucky that basically created a framework for licensing industrial hemp and its sale and manufacture and sale. And once that was passed, it all requires the federal government to relieve their restrictions on industrial hemp. So our Kentucky Agricultural Commissioner, James Comer, went up and tried to talk to the DEA to get a waiver and basically was told by the DEA to go pound salt. Comer said, here reading from the story, Comer said the DEA told him they didn't meet with third parties and wouldn't have met with the state's Democratic governor, Steve Beshear, either. Comer talked the decision up to the DEA protecting their turf and their cash. Quote, I know there's a lot of money appropriated for marijuana eradication, unquote, he said. And that really is, I think, what this is all about. I mean, first of all, we've seen the attitude in the country in general on marijuana. We're over 50% now in favor nationwide of legalizing marijuana. In Kentucky, that percentage is sitting in the 40s. But, you know, industrial hemp is way up there, high 60% support. Medical marijuana is above 50%. So the only thing in Kentucky that is still not favored popularly is recreational use of marijuana. Certainly, there is big money in this. I mean, there's grant money that goes to all these agencies to fight marijuana, to spend on flying helicopters around looking for marijuana crops. A friend of mine who was in the National Guard, that was one of his stateside duties, was flying around in a helicopter with night vision goggles and looking for marijuana plants. Personally, I think there's probably a better use of the time and resources, but that's what they did. Additionally, you know, there's other trickle-down effects as well. You start decriminalizing, and now all of a sudden you've got prisons that are empty, and boy, that'd be horrible to, like, not put as many people in prison. And you've got the entire judicial system that would have far less work to do. So it does have a trickle-down effect. Now, I would say that those things are good things, that it's a good thing that we don't put as many people in prison. It's a good thing that we don't clog our judicial system and create a larger than necessary judiciary on something as silly as marijuana. But this is industrial hemp, and it's extraordinarily frustrating. There's been a bill filed since February that industrial hemp can be used in a way that will benefit Kentucky. It's an economic, potentially economic benefit to the state to produce and use it. And extraordinarily frustrating that the bill that has been proposed back as far as February has been stalled in committees since. And I've asked some friends in Michigan and Virginia, people who live in the area that are represented by those that are holding these things up in committee, to please ask their congresspeople to let this thing move forward, give this thing a up or down hearing, and don't just kill it in the committee. Let's talk about it, just like we did here in Kentucky. Let's not kill this thing in committee. Let's have the debate, have the discussion, and have the vote. And if you live in, I can't remember the districts offhand, but Michigan and Virginia, and you're listening to the show, send me a message later on, and I'll pass along what districts those are. Here locally, we have this ongoing saga with the Botany Bay. And in the interest of full disclosure, I'm friends with the owner. But this insane thing with the whole war on drugs and the synthetic marijuana and all this stuff, I mean, synthetic marijuana is only in existence because the real stuff is illegal. And there's this big fight going on with Botany Bay and the Lexington police. And now the latest in this is that I think it's the fourth time now that a judge has ruled that the police have to return a large portion of that which was taken. Many of these items weren't even on the search warrant. They were just things that were in the store that the police took. And there is video out there where you can clearly hear that as things are being packed into boxes, and of course the police wouldn't let anybody monitor directly, but you can hear in the video, and as they're peeking cameras through the windows, you can see people throwing things into boxes and hearing things break as they're put into boxes. I mean, it's very clear. You can't mistake the sound of glass breaking. The police, of course, deny that anything was broken, but they also did not do an inventory on site. They did an inventory once they got back to the police station and told people that that was the case, that they were not going to do an inventory on site. So it's really a question of are they really going to get all their stuff back at this point? And the answer is probably going to be no. Obviously, they're going to pick out anything that was broken because it does open them up to a civil lawsuit. And based on the story, the latest story that came out a couple of days ago, that is indeed what's going to happen here. There will be a lawsuit filed when the police do not return all the things, because they won't, because there's stuff that's broken and they don't want to admit that they did that. And speaking of fake drugs that replace real drugs because of the war on terror, or war on drugs, excuse me, wrong war, we have a story out of Leslie County. They found just a monstrous meth production area. And, you know, we've got a big problem here throughout the state of Kentucky with both meth, and up here in northern Kentucky anyway, heroin is becoming a big problem. And, again, these are the things that what we're experiencing are things that are a result of the war on drugs. I mean, these people would have obviously taken these things, or there's people that get hooked on this stuff that want to get off, but because it's criminalized, they don't seek mental health professionals to help them get off of these things. I did see a good story about someone who got off of methamphetamines recently and has cleaned up their life, and that's very, very good. That's a very good thing, but it's a very rare thing. Most of the folks that get hooked on things like meth end up dying, and that's because it is a crime, and so they do not seek help because they don't want to go to jail. You create disincentive to seek help when you criminalize that type of behavior. So, you know, it's just kind of amazing. The whole thing is a mess. And there was another story that came out here. This is actually kind of old. This is from the end of March. Brad Pitt came out and basically said that America's war on drugs is a charade and a failure. And it pretty much goes through the numbers that we've gone through on the show before about how much money is spent and what the results are and how it doesn't solve anything. And you know, I think we've talked about this on the show prior, that there are better ways to do this. Portugal decriminalized and has seen very good results. The drug usage is down. that the spread of very nasty diseases is way down. People seeking help is up. And at the end of the day, I think that that's the right thing. They basically took their money that was being used for the war on drugs in their country and shifted it over to mental health and helping people get away from addiction. And it's seen positive results. And I think that that's probably the much better approach overall. Is if you're going to spend that money, spend it on helping people who want help rather than incarcerating people and destroying their lives even further. Because once you've got a felony, it's pretty much impossible to get a decent job ever again. And especially in this economy, I mean, even places like McDonald's won't hire you if you've got a felony, no matter what it is. So the war on drugs is a mess. We've really got to get a handle on it, but I don't see that happening. There's a lot of money involved in it. There's a lot of fiefdoms to be protected, fiefdoms that have been built around fighting the war on drugs. And so the bureaucracy is going to fight tooth and nail to preserve that status quo. And they'll just tell you, hey, all we need is some more money. Just throw some more money at the problem. I promise this time you'll get results. So what if over the past 40 years we haven't got squat? Just throw some more money at it. That'll solve it this time. Oh, yeah, we've got licked this time. So, yeah, it's a mess, and it's just going to continue as long as we continue that policy. So kind of shifting gears here, I have a story here, and I've seen a little bit about this because some of our local tea parties were involved in this. The IRS came out and basically apologized for red flagging Tea Party and Patriot groups and things like that, trying to deny them 501c3 status. A number of groups had applied and started going, the IRS went through and just required just a ridiculous amount of paperwork. I mean, I talked to some of these Tea Party leaders about this probably over a year ago now, and essentially they said, hey, these guys at the IRS are asking us for every email we've ever sent. They want to know every speaker, anyone who's ever stood up and spoken at a Tea Party, who they were. They want to know everything. And quite honestly, and if you've never been to a Tea Party meeting, you would never know. I mean, it's basically a public forum. Anybody can get up and speak. There's no real set agenda per se, typically. Even when there's a guest speaker or a specific topic, the meetings never stay on that guest speaker or that guest topic or a specific topic. It just meanders to whatever that group of people want to talk about. I mean, that's the nature of a true grassroots organization, is that it's defined by its membership and those that show up at that particular meeting. And so while certainly certain groups have tried to subvert the Tea Party, certain groups, certain candidates, certain organizations have tried to get the Tea Party to do one thing or another, you know, at the end of the day, the members have to decide what they're going to do, and they do. And it doesn't matter who gets up and speaks. It's an individual thing. The only thing the Tea Party really does as a group, per se, are things like parades or public events where they just go out and do stuff, right? And they'll go fight a tax if it's affecting them directly. But typically speaking, you know, if there's a tax in one county, the members of a Tea Party or another county are not going to come knocking at the door. So there was this apology issued by the IRS, and they tried to play it off and basically say, well, this was a local problem, and we really apologize for that and whatever. Well, a couple days later, story came out, and this one here is from Politico, that the IRS absolutely, absolutely knew that the high-end officials knew that they were targeting Tea Parties. And in fact, they were told to do so by those in the executive branch. They were told to filter and funnel and harass the Tea Party groups and whatnot. And basically, they've now been caught, and, you know, these groups are getting their 501c3 status approved now. But, you know, it's a big deal. I mean, basically the government was lying for a long time, saying there was no special treatment, and now there's proof that to the contrary. And, you know, there's a funny picture going around on Facebook, and I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it's a picture of the outside of the Internal Revenue Service building, and it says, "We're really sorry about unfairly targeting conservative groups. that you can totally trust us to fairly enforce Obamacare. And I think that's, you know, that speaks to any policy in government. The problem is that whenever you give government power, carte blanche power, it can be abused. And that's the danger of getting government involved in things that very much impact your everyday life. And kind of staying on the Obamacare stuff here, there was a story about Oregon, and the Oregon insurers have to file with the state, kind of like we would do with our co-ops, right? You have to file to get approval to be able to charge a certain amount of money for services. And Oregon, they are asking, there's one group that's asking for a 53% hike for next year. There's 17 insurers finished filing different policies and whatnot. This story is from April 29th, so it's a couple weeks old. But essentially, these insurance organizations are asking for record increases on the eve of the implementation of Obamacare. And the reality is that Obamacare is going to cost you and me more money, period. If you don't fall into the class that you get it for free, then it's going to cost you more money than it costs today, despite the claims that it was going to save money. And they'll spin it and say, well, it would have went up more. Well, really? I don't remember the last time insurance premiums went up 53% in 1 year. I don't believe it. What you're seeing is some of this obviously is front-loading because they know that at some point the feds are going to say, no, you can't increase your rate anymore. So they're front-loading future increases because they know or think in the future they're not going to be able to get those. But some of this is legit. I mean, if you work in the industry at all, in IT, in medical, you see how much money is being plowed into complying with Obamacare. It is a ridiculous amount of money. And the money has to come from somewhere. It doesn't just appear. Hospitals get their money from those who use the services. Insurance companies are the ones that have to pay those hospitals. You and I are the ones that pay the insurance companies. So as the money trickles, the new required money trickles up from the medical providers to the insurance companies, and then from the insurance companies up to you and me, that's what we're seeing is an increase in our premiums. And it absolutely is going to happen. And, in fact, it's getting so bad now that even a lot of Democrats are starting to back off of Obamacare and supporting it. It's getting really, really bad. I've talked to a couple of local folks here, friends of mine, that have either their hours reduced or have been laid off as a result. And the employer says, as a result of the Obamacare look back, which was created by the Department of Health and Human Services. See, all this Obamacare stuff, the main crux is supposed to start January 1st of next year. So all these employers said, okay, well, on January 1st, we'll just fire everybody on December 31st. So the Department of Health and Human Services created a look-back period. Right now that look-back period is 6 months. And so basically if you're employed on July 1st, then your hours, the amount of hours you work will be included in the Obamacare calculation for the liabilities on the business. And so what we're seeing now is businesses are starting to lay off people proactively now, phasing their workforce down, focusing only on the things that are the most profitable and dumping everything that doesn't net them a high enough profit. And so what in the end is going to come of this is that you and I are going to be less served because there's going to be fewer people to do the work, and there's going to be less product on the shelves because they're not high enough profit margin items to keep on the shelves. We are not going to be served by this. But on top of all of that, Harry Reid came out and said more funding is needed to prevent Obamacare from becoming a train wreck. And he used that phrase, and I think that's funny because I've been calling Obamacare a train wreck for over a year now. And that's what it's going to be. But, of course, government is always about, well, we'll just throw more money at it. That'll solve the problem. Throw more money at it. That solves it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It never solves the problem. Just like the war on drugs, Obamacare, whatever, throwing money at a fundamentally flawed program just allows more money to be spent in a fundamentally flawed way. It doesn't solve the damn problem. And so it's, like I said, it's in a way it's funny, but it's sad because we're all going to be affected by it, myself included. And We've been over this before, but I'm especially upset about it because I lose my health insurance at the end of the year because my health insurance is considered a loophole. And so I don't get to keep my insurance, and I'm very unhappy about that. And more Americans are unhappy about Obamacare and how it's going to play out. There's a story here from April 12th that support for Obama's health care law is at new lows. And basically the crux of the story is that Obama's approval rating The poll showed 59% of seniors oppose the new health care law. Only 29% support it. Sorry, folks, this one's a real hard one to read because the color of the page is black on gray. Man, that's hard to read. But essentially, the poll shows that many more Americans do not support Obamacare than do support it, and it's going to get worse. I guarantee you that. When Obamacare really starts to kick in this summer, oh, boy, is it going to get ugly. It's going to get really, 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 really ugly. And, you know, there's not it's not going to be good. So we're at the bottom of the hour. I've got a lot more to do, but I want to take a break right now because we're at a good spot to do that. Folks, again, if you want to call in, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And we'll be right back here after a few-minute break. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the MyView Matters Radio Network.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, and we're back, folks. Welcome again. This is Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network Sunday night. We've got a lot still to cover, but if you'd like to call in, area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And be sure to hit the number one key if you want to talk. Otherwise, you just sit in the queue and listen to the show. All right, getting back to it here. We have talked about, I believe, on this show, and I know some of the other shows on the network have talked about the DHS ammo stockpiling stuff. The stats on this are just simply amazing, that they have enough ammunition to wage a hot war inside the United States for 20 years with all the ammo that they've purchased. It's an amazing amount of ammunition that they've purchased. And there's finally, some congressmen that are calling for an investigation to try to figure out what in the world do they need with all of this ammunition. It's rather ridiculous, really. And so that's, I think, a good thing that we find out what the heck they're doing. I'm awfully curious myself. In kind of a related thing, I mean, we've got a few things here on the gun topic. The blueprints for the plastic gun. I don't know if you guys have heard about this. The 3D printers that are out there that use plastics and polymers to create a 3D object. They're out there now, and it's pretty cool. I saw this technology actually in action, but in the reverse, kind of, over a decade ago, where they were using lasers to cut 3D objects. This is kind of the opposite, where they layer, three-dimensionally layer plastic on top of each other to create a 3D object. And the world's first plastic gun was recently created, so you could actually fire bullets out of this gun. And the reports showed that the plastic gun, the printed gun, was good for up to 600 rounds of ammunition. That's pretty significant. I mean, if you think about shooting a projectile out of a piece of plastic, a very hot projectile because it's an explosion, out of a piece of plastic, to get 600 rounds out of that is pretty amazing. And in response now, the State Department demanded the blueprints be removed from offline. And so the site that had hosted them did indeed remove them, but not before the information was put out, over 100,000 downloads, and is now available on peer-to-peer networks like the Pirate Bay. So the information is still out there. The genie's out of the bottle, if you will. But certainly the federal government and those who would like to regulate firearms are extraordinarily displeased with this coming of events. And, of course, there's new 3D printer technology out there that's coming that will actually layer metal, and that's kind of the next generation of these 3D printers will be creating things with metal rather than just plastics. And when that occurs, I mean, all bets are off. Who knows what you'll be able to do or not do with those. So the reality is the gun thing is a wedge issue, and it's not even working that well, which is kind of entertaining. Yes, it solidifies a core anti-gun base for liberal Democrats, but the majority of Americans are not on board with this. And there's actually been a number of stories that have come out recently that start to talk about why that's the case. There's a number of stories about how people don't even realize that the number of homicides has been significantly reduced over time. That by population, our homicide rate is at one of the lower points in history. And there was actually an interesting graph, and apparently that story didn't print out for me, but one that kind of showed that when the gun controls came into effect, the gun control laws went into effect originally back in the teens, 19-teens, there was a dramatic increase in the number of people who were killed, you know, per capita, killed using guns. And that since the relaxation of those carry laws, or the reintroduction of the carry laws, and then also the relaxation, changing things from a shall issue, or excuse me, a may issue to a shall issue, which means that instead of leaving it up to a county sheriff to decide who gets to carry and who doesn't, forcing a county sheriff to issue a permit to anyone who meets the requirements set out by law to put those, to make those people legal carriers of firearms, there's been a significant decrease in the number of people who have become a victim of a gun homicide per capita. And so it kind of goes back to, boy, this is 13 years ago, I guess. John R. Lott Jr. had a book called More Guns, Less Crime. And he actually showed both at the macro and micro level how more guns actually equates to less gun crime because, you know, it's easy. These thugs that are out there like easy prey. They want the easy money. They want the easy target, the easy mark. Well, if this person may be carrying a gun, is it really worth $40 to get shot? And that's really a question that runs through the minds of a lot of these criminals. That's why you see now an increase in property crime rather than hot burglaries. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, there's going to be crime, and that's unfortunate. But it's better that it's property crime rather than people being murdered, raped. You know, that's really what the gun laws and the proliferation of firearms has done. It's seen a reduction in overall homicides. And the reasoning is because criminals are thinking, hey, it's not worth it. And even a criminal gets it because at the end of the day, they have that instinct for self-preservation as well. And as this gun argument has continued and the issues out there, a number of states have started pushing Firearm Freedom Act type stuff. We had one here in Kentucky. Of course, it never passed, but it was out there. But it takes some guts to actually pass one because essentially these bills tell the feds, hey, you know what? You can pass these laws, but we think they're unconstitutional. And so we're going to do our own thing in our state. And so long as the firearms don't go out of our state, as long as they're made here and stay here, then you have no jurisdiction. And so Kansas passed one such law this year, and there's been an ongoing conversation back and forth between Attorney General Eric Holder and Governor Sam Brownback of Kansas. And it keeps going back and forth and back and forth, but essentially the feds are telling the state that, hey, you still have to enforce our law, and the state's basically saying, hey, no, we don't. And so it's an interesting thing, and something I've always said is that when there's a federal law that's unjust, you know, there's a lot of unfunded mandates that come down from D.C., but certainly we're under no obligation to fully commit to those. I mean, if the feds pass a law that's just unreasonable to deal with, then don't enforce it. Let the feds come in and spend their money doing it. And then we, you know, of course, we don't want the feds will keep running up money as well, but at least that way the state's not going into debt enforcing that stupid law, and it becomes a hassle for the feds to do it too. And so speaking of Attorney General Eric Holder, there's a story out a few days ago here that the Department of Justice has come out and said that they don't need warrants for email and Facebook chats. And we've been talking about in the past how the IRS has said this, and that the FBI wants a law that lets them do it. Now the Department of Justice is coming out and saying, hey, we don't need a warrant. And we've gone on the show and talked about how these federal agencies are usurping the Fourth Amendment and the modern application of the Fourth Amendment to they are usurping what should be covered under the Fourth Amendment and the interpretations that have come before. If you take those interpretations and apply them to modern technology, then yes, they should have to get a warrant to read your email. Yes, they should have to get a warrant to read your private communications. These are precedents that have been there for a very long time, and these agencies are trying to undo these things that have been protected by our court, that have been ruled as protections, that no, you have to get a warrant. Hey, if it's legit, you can get a warrant for it. I talked about that, I think, last week. I don't remember. This comes up over and over and over again, it seems like. And the point is that we don't need the Constitution to be subverted just because it's some new modern way of doing things. The system should work, and if you don't believe the system works, then you have no faith in the system, and that's what it comes down to. So kind of shifting gears here, I have this kind of titled The Bad Cops. lot of information here lately, obviously in light of the Boston bombings and whatnot, there's been a lot of call for violating our rights. Most recently here, a story from just a few days ago, New York police chief has come out and said, hey, if you're not a terrorist and if you're not a threat, then prove it. Basically saying that you're guilty until proven innocent. I mean, this is a very, very radical shift. And it's funny because I read a speech from Joe Biden talking how, well, if we radically change how we do things, if we give up our rights for safety, then the terrorists have won. Well, isn't that what's happening here? I mean, if we're shifting from innocent until proven guilty to guilty until proven innocent, if we're saying you don't get Miranda rights if we don't like the crime you're accused of, haven't we changed the system? Does that mean that the terrorists have won, Joe? Because in a way, I kind of agree with you on that. If we're changing the system radically and taking away the Constitution, then they won. We have nothing left. But I'm certainly not going to sit down and let it happen. I mean, we've got to continue to fight this. I mean, it's amazing. Folks, you know, the system works. We know the system works. And, yes, things change. And, yes, the mechanisms are there. But, hey, we had terrorism, quote-unquote terrorism, at the time of the founders. One of the reasons for the Constitution, the shift from the Articles to the Constitution, was because of the Barbary pirates sinking our ships. They needed a standing navy to fight the Barbary pirates who were sinking ships and taking the cargo. The system can work. The tools we need are already there. We don't need to give up our rights in order to save ourselves. And that's really the dangerous precedent that's being set or trying to be set by all these bureaucracies that are trying to subvert our rights. So shifting gears a little bit here, in news of the insane, a girl, 16-year-old, in Florida, has been charged with a felony for a failed science experiment. Essentially, she was trying to, and I don't remember the exact thing that she was trying to do, but it was basically mixing some chemicals together and was supposed to do something kind of ooh-ah kind of thing, and it accidentally exploded. And she talked to the principal, she talked to the school authorities and whatnot, and basically admitted what happened, apologized for it, explained the situation, and from my understanding, it was pretty much done at that point. And then the police decided to file felony charges against this girl, who, from all accounts, is actually a very good student, and it's just kind of, like I said, disturbing that this is happening. And it's these zero tolerance, you know, policies are just ridiculous. And we can't give up everything for safety. Otherwise, we're all going to end up as criminals with no due process to protect us from a system that treats us as inferior. Let's see here. What is the story? Oh, so, yeah, I don't know if you guys saw this guy who goes by the name of by the name Extravagant. He's a rapper. He's 24 years old. He was arrested in a parking lot for drinking an Arizona iced tea, and essentially he was in the parking lot. His friend was in the store. He was drinking a can of Arizona iced tea. If you haven't seen them, they're 99 cents. They're kind of big, whatever. And a plainclothes officer walked up to him and started talking to him, asking him to see something and whatnot, not clearly identifying himself at first. And I've seen the video. I mean, there's video of parts of this. And The cop's asking him all kinds of questions, whatever, then identifies himself as an undercover officer. Well, by this time, the conversation's already sour. And basically the guy's like, look, man, you know, you don't have a warrant. I have a reason to be here. You have no reason to harass me. Go away. And, of course, the officer did not like that. And so he was arrested. And I'm trying to see here what the actual charges were. I know one was failure to obey a lawful order, which I always love that one. Whenever they tell you to do something and you question it, then you're failing to obey a lawful order, even if the order was based off of something unlawful. And that's always kind of an interesting thing. Here we go. Yeah, he was charged with trespassing, even though his friend was in the store and he had every right to be there, and he was, you know, out in the parking lot, and resisting a public officer. So he is challenging it. He is challenging that his Fourth Amendment rights were violated. And, you know, from basically it was a cop being a jerk, and he got in trouble. And hopefully there'll be a lawsuit, and that'll all get settled out. I assume everybody by now has heard about this, but and this is a couple weeks old now, but there was a Supreme Court case that came out. This is New London, Connecticut. Now, that's entertaining. But anyway, the U.S. District Court, excuse me, not Supreme Court, found that in New London, Connecticut, there was a candidate who wanted to work for the police force who was denied because he was too smart. That was the official reason they gave for him not being allowed to be an officer. And the reasons that were given were that he may question authority and become bored with the job over time. The guy sued, and the U.S. District Court found that the police had shown rationale in not hiring him based on him being too smart, and that therefore they were justified in doing so. Meanwhile, this guy currently works as a prison guard. So, you know, it's really a bad PR thing, if anything, to say, yeah, you're not allowed to be a cop because you're too smart. I mean, what does that really say? Does that mean the rest of your officers are morons? I mean, really? That's really a really stupid thing to prove in court. Meanwhile, and the last thing on the bad cop stuff here, a Pennsylvania judge was sentenced to 28 years in prison for selling teens to prisons. Basically, he was incarcerating or putting teenagers into prison. And in Pennsylvania, I guess they have private prisons. So basically the private prisons were kicking back money to the judge for the judge sentencing them to be sent to their prisons. And there were allegations that the terms were as long as they could be because the prisons made more money that way. And that's, I guess, the wrap-up of the bad cops section. Shifting very quickly, because we're running out of time very quickly here, and I see someone's in the queue that has a question mark next to their name. I don't know if they want to talk or not, but let's see here. Yes, so the EU, if you haven't been paying attention, the EU is unraveling. It's getting really, really ugly. The northern states are tired of funding the southern states. The southern states are tired of being told by the northern states what to do, and the EU is unraveling. In fact, I saw a story where there's a new European Free Trade Association is starting, and it's basically the EU but without the currency stuff involved. And so they're putting in basically the move is that a number of nations want to move to that style of organization rather than having the euro and all of that. And it's getting ugly. I mean, there's a lot of money involved in all this. Germany and some of the wealthier nations are bailing out some of the nations that have overpromised. And they're requiring that these nations pull back on their promises, and so the people of those nations are mad. That's a really ugly situation. You know, I figured the EU was going to fail. You've got nations that literally warred with each other for centuries or millennia, and now you're trying to make them one nation. And it's a very different situation than the United States was, and it's going to fail. But a lot of that's happening based off of the debt of the of certain nations. And speaking of debt, here in the States, the U.S. House approved a debt ceiling backup plan. So we're coming up on the debt ceiling again, and this time it looks like the House Republicans are going to try to make a stand on it, and basically they put forth a bill that funds or deals with certain pieces of government that they feel is necessary to continue, but without a full funding measure. And so if the debt ceiling freezes, or the debt ceiling is hit, basically all spending is supposed to freeze at that point. But they've put together a contingency plan that will allow certain things to continue to be funded. The plan is apparently expected to die in the Senate. So we're headed for another debt ceiling debate. Oh, joy. All right, last segment. Oh, boy, 6.5 minutes. We're going to have to bust through this. The people of America are becoming more and more and more dissatisfied with government, and things are getting uglier and uglier and uglier. From bailouts and the small businesses that aren't getting bailouts and new regulations and everything going on, things are just getting out of control. There's a new poll out that shows that most Americans this is an older poll. This is from August 2011. Most Americans think the federal government has too much power. And then I've got another poll here, if I can find the darn thing again, that 55% of people think that government should let too-big-to-fail banks go bust. In general, people, the attitude is becoming more and more libertarian in general, where people are sick of the government. They feel the government is not functional or dysfunctional, and that it has too much power, it interferes too much. They're upset that these banks all got a bailout, but nobody else feels like they're getting a bailout or anything like that. And so it's very much a situation where more and more people are getting sick of the system, and it's getting ugly. In fact, I've got a poll here, and this is relatively recent here. This one is May 2nd. It says 29% of registered voters believe that armed revolution might be necessary in the next few years. I mean, this is a pretty significant stat. I mean, it's 18% of Democrats, 27% of independents, and 44% of Republicans believe that armed revolution may be necessary in the next few years. Now, obviously, I am not for an armed revolution. In fact, and I've told people this in the past, when I got involved in politics, it was because I saw an armed revolution coming, and I want to work to avoid that. I don't think that'll be good for the country. I don't think that'll be good for my children. And so what I do politically is to try to prevent that, to try to solve these problems. But government continues to make a mess, and at times it's very, very difficult to continue on, but we've had minor successes, and we've seen those successes. And there are groups out fighting the good fight. There's a story here from Politico. A watchdog has been says the government's been trying to silence him in Afghanistan. And this guy is someone who was appointed as the inspector general for the Afghanistan reconstruction. By the way, that's code word for nation building. And he's just frustrated as can be because he, as the appointed person who's supposed to be watching over how money is being spent and the progress in Afghanistan, is being stonewalled by the government. And, you know, even people that are supposed to be watching from the inside can't do their job. And that's, you know, pretty amazing. But as things get ugly and there's money that's becoming less and less prevalent, Detroit, we've all heard about Detroit's woes. And what's amazing is that there was just a story here about how the Kriege Foundation purchased 23 new ambulances and 100 new police cars for the city of Detroit because their budget woes, they're in deep, deep trouble there. Big, big problems for Detroit. And the bureaucracy, of course, is like, oh, my gosh, how dare we let the private sector buy us 23 ambulances and 100 police cars? What a horrible precedent for someone to actually voluntarily give us these cars. Meanwhile, some folks in a neighborhood built a bench to put in a local bus stop, and the bureaucracy came down on them and told them they have to remove the wooden bench that they created and put in the bus stop. So basically, the bureaucracy, while it has no money to do things like buy police cars and ambulances, has the time to go out and harass neighbors about putting a bench in a bus stop. And that's the kind of thing, it's just amazing. It's a number of things, all these different things. And I'm going to toot my own horn here. For those that don't know, I'm involved with the Libertarian Party of Kentucky. I'm now the state chairman again. One of the things I just recently graphed is that we've had record growth. I mean, absolute record growth since July of last year. And I think a lot of this has to do with the election, but it also has to do with everything we've talked about tonight on the show. All these failed policies, all these things that are blowing up, all the failed promises, all the insanity of the bureaucracy coming down on people saying we have no money to do things like police and fire, things that most of the public agree is a good thing, but we have time to harass people about a wooden bench that they built voluntarily, that they condemn the act of private organizations giving ambulances and police cars to a city that is bankrupt. I mean, this is just the height of ridiculousness that's really condemned. And so as the libertarians really start to – libertarianism starts to take rise and the Libertarian Party starts to get a foothold, we start to see other actions of the old guard to try to protect their turf, to try to protect their bureaucracy. We see within the Republican Party, and we've talked about this so many times on the show, trying to keep the liberty people down, the Tea Partiers, the libertarians, all the folks over there that are trying to reform the Republican Party and trying to become a force within that group to try to push liberty in that way. And when that fails, those people flip over or try to come over to the Libertarian Party. But now we see new things like this push for Top Two. And I know my friends over at Independent Kentucky like the Top Two movement, but you have to read the motivation about why people are pushing this stuff. In Montana, the legislature just voted to put Top Two in place. Why? Because the Libertarian Party is starting to get a foothold. Who pushed the bill? Republicans. Of course they did. They fear the Libertarians. As they kick the Libertarians out, where are they going to go? To us. Folks, we're out of time. This show went really fast. Thank you for tuning in. Tune in next week for another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the Mind You Matters Radio Network.